Hello, everyone!
Hello!
We're back!
Oh my god, are we back?
That was a while.
Yeah. Just real quick, mine's still not showing any wavelengths. Is it showing up on yours?
Yeah.
Okay. Good. Okay. So, we apologize that we were gone for 2 months almost.
Oh shit, has it really been 2 months?
It's been almost 2 months. I know that the last time we recorded was a couple weeks before The Legend of Zelda came out. So, yeah, it has been a while.
Yeah, it has.
Not that we weren't thoroughly distracted with The Legend of Zelda.
But... and other things.
Yeah, it really did kind of come down to just life being life more than anything, so...
yeah, pretty much.
But we will try to get back on a regular schedule. It's been really rough. We do appreciate those of you who are sticking it out, and for those of you who actually got really excited to see a new episode today.
Yay!
So...
So, anime news. We don't have much.
The anime news is that we're back.
We're back. The only anime news I have is that Konosuba was announced for season 3.
Yeah, a lot of it really is just announcements and stuff like Ranking of Kings got announced for a new movie.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah, Chainsaw Man got announced for the next season and a movie.
Mm-hmm.
Demon Slayer season 4 is currently in the works. So, it's mostly just stuff like that. Like...
yeah.
We don't really have anything that's, like, super exciting or crazy, so...
that's true.
But we're back!
Yeah!
Yeah! So, we didn't really watch a whole lot of anime during that 2 months, too. So, that was another reason for not recording.
No, it's so true. I wanted to start watching stuff, and then... next thing I know... we're on episode 8 of the season, and I've only kept up with, like, 3 anime.
Yeah, I stopped watching most of the shows around episode 6, so I've been just kind of binging everything to get caught up before next season.
I kept telling myself, as soon as I get a day, I'm going to binge a bunch of stuff. And then I never got a day. I was busy for, like, 2 months straight. And so I was never able to even start anything.
Yeah, we've been working on a lot of independent projects, as well as our day jobs, as well as just trying to keep our heads above water, so...
yeah.
Watching, and then being distracted by the most anticipated video game of the entire year didn't help, so...
right.
So it was a lot of just everything happening all at once, unfortunately. But, like I said, it happens. We're grateful to those of you who are excited that we're back, so... I did get to binge a few of the shows that I was watching last season. I think I binged 4 different shows in the last few days.
Okay.
It's definitely been easier since I was halfway through each of the seasons, but... so it's not like I had to start everything from episode 1. But the one show in particular that I felt... was the most important for us to talk about, because it's probably one of the ones that is getting the most attention right now, is Demon Slayer season 3.
Yay! It's another Demon Slayer episode!
It's another Demon Slayer episode!
This is like our, what, 6th or something? I don't know. Not that many.
It's at least number 4. Maybe number 5. It's not 6. I know that. It's 4 or 5 at this point, because we've done 1 for each season, and then we did 2 for the first season.
Okay. So that makes sense.
Yeah, it would have been 6 if we did 1 for when we went to see it in theaters, but we didn't. So yeah, pretty close.
All right.
We're going to record an episode after we saw it in theaters, and then we're just like... nah.
I'm tired.
Yeah. So, yeah, pretty close, though. So this season, I did want to kind of go over it, because in my opinion, the last season is the best arc in Demon Slayer, the Red Light District arc, or Entertainment District arc is, I think, the Western name for it, because they don't want to call the Red Light District arc.
Because, ooh, Red Light District. We don't... you know, people, Americans, one, won't know what that is, but if those who do know what it is know that it's naughty.
Yeah, this is a family show about murder.
A family show about murder. Oh, boy.
So, I went into this season knowing that this is not my favorite arc. So, I kind of want to also know kind of your takes on it as somebody who didn't read the manga, because I read the entire series already.
Yeah.
And so I kind of want to talk about the bad first, and then kind of get into the good, because I think this season has a lot of both.
Okay.
So, starting with the bad, first of all, I want to say, before we start about the bad, actually, to the people who are still mad about the movie or the theater release, where they were just like, oh, I thought it was a movie, and it turns out it was just 20 minutes of new content. First of all, it was an hour of new content.
Stay mad, assholes. Stay mad.
The first episode was an hour long. The, you know, using the last two episodes of the last season was just to fill in the time slot, because the movie theater's not going to reserve it for just an hour. And second of all, it was absolutely worth seeing it in theaters. It was so good seeing it in theaters.
Right.
And seeing Tengen's fight from the last season was also worth seeing in theaters.
So good.
It was so good. It was absolutely worth it. So for the people who are just like, meh, it was false advertising. Oh my god. I'm like, learn to read. Like, the ad was very clear what you were going to see. And it was not called Demon Slayer the movie. It was called Demon Slayer the premiere. Like,
You can basically say learn to read to, like, any consumer out there, and you wouldn't be in the wrong, because,
yeah.
Well, let's face it, as two people who have worked in customer service jobs, nobody knows how to fucking read.
Yeah, and the reason I bring this up is because I really do hope we get another premiere episode like that. Because I thought it was a lot of fun. I hope that Crunchyroll isn't deterred from doing it again just because people were complaining about it.
Right.
I would particularly love to see the last two episodes of this season in theaters like they did with the last season. Where it's like you start with the last two episodes and then you get the first episode of the new season.
Yeah.
I would
also
love to look at that.
Also with the bad, we didn't get to see What's-Her-Name's tits.
God, okay, I legit have a coworker and love him to death. He kept telling me the only reason he was excited about this season was the bath scene.
Oh my god, seriously?
He was like, oh my god, it was better than I could have ever hoped for. I'm like, man, you got a wife. Like, you are not lonely or single.
Look, anime titties are better than real titties. I can't explain it, okay? It's just the way it is.
So, yeah. But let's go ahead and get into what I felt like Ufa Table kind of missed the mark on, or things that I feel like were a problem from the manga as well. Because I do think it's important to acknowledge these before we get into the, oh my god, Demon Slayer's anime of the year again! I can't believe it! So we'll start with the bad, and for me it is Muichiro's entire arc. I was pretty disappointed in.
What, did it not go in depth enough, or was it just kind of lackluster?
It was kind of lackluster. Like, it filled, like, okay, here's the thing, he is gonna get more content in upcoming seasons. Like, it's not like his story is just bad and it's one and done. But I felt like when I read his story in the manga, it genuinely kind of had me a little bit shook. Like, so a lot of people talk about, like, with horror manga, you get the art of the page turn, where you as the reader are in control of the pacing of it. You know, if when you turn the page and you see something gruesome or scary, you were the one who controlled seeing that. Where anime lacks that pacing because you're just sitting by and waiting for it to happen. I feel like that's kind of what happened with his arc, in my opinion. A lot of, like, the more gruesome details, like the maggots being under his skin because he didn't want to let go of his brother's hand, that was so much more terrifying and chilling when I read it in the manga than seeing it in the anime. in the anime, it was just kind of like, oh, I guess those look like maggots. Kinda.
Yeah. Yeah, they didn't.
Yeah, I feel like Ufotable approached it very much like a shonen anime, which, to be fair, it is a shonen anime. But this is a shonen anime that does take a little bit of inspiration from different genres, and I felt like they should have approached his story a bit more like a horror and less like an action. I do think there was one moment that I felt like was done really well, and that was when his brother's arm got cut off and it just flew by his face. That was genuinely, like, kind of had me jump a little bit, but...
Yeah.
Aside from that, his story felt really, really tame, particularly when he was, like, drowning to death, and he was just kind of sitting there like, well, I guess I'm just gonna drown to death. That's neat.
this is my life.
Which is a mood, but...
Like, and I didn't even have to pay $250,000 for it.
Yeah, Muyuchino is definitely the Gen Z-er of the Demon Slayer core, because he's just like, oh, great, I guess I'm dying. Shit, alright.
This is cool, I guess.
Yeah. Ugh. Guess somebody beat me to it. God, I guess everybody's just gonna be like, oh, well, he wasn't as sad as Rengoku, so... Whatever.
Yeah.
So yeah, he... Part of that was kind of how his personality was in the manga, but again, I felt like there was a lot more tension there when I was reading it, and I guess a lot of that really does have to do with the pacing. Because otherwise you're just sitting there like, hey, wasn't Muichiro, like, in a water jug or something? Like...
Yeah, wasn't he, like, in the water prison, like, Kakashi?
Yeah.
Some shit, like...
Are we ever gonna cut back to that scene? Like...
Right?
Or is he just gone? Like, and then when we get back to it, he's just kind of like, yeah, no, I guess I still have a little bit of oxygen in my lungs. I guess I should try to get out. Stab. Nope, that didn't work. Well...
Most unenthusiastic escape plan ever. Just like... Yeah, that didn't work.
Well, that sucks. Yeah, like... I think a lot of it is
rip
also...
Rip me, I guess.
Right. It's just on TikTok, like, hey guys, so if you guys don't get an update from me, I'm sorry, I drowned. So, guess I'll catch you guys on the flip side. I don't know, what did Gen Zers say? What do they talk like?
I don't know!
What's a TikTok?
I don't understand these references. Right. I'm over 30!
But yeah, it genuinely was, like, the most, like, boring part of the series, in my opinion. And I get, like, the whole point is supposed to be that he's calm. But I felt like the tone was just a little bit of a misstep.
Yeah, because there really wasn't. Like you mentioned, it just he just kind of, like, eh.
Yeah. And then when he actually did get out, he was just like, oh my god, if only I tried, like, 20 minutes ago, I wouldn't have been in there. Like,
kudos to him for holding his breath for that long, though.
Right? And then, like, the whole part where he gets the mark, it did a pretty good job of it, but it kind of, in the manga, it was like this big aha moment. Like, it really drew your attention to the fact that he has this mark now. And in the anime, he's just kind of like, yo, I suddenly have, like, all this energy. Like, Monster Energy drink kicks ass. I don't know.
Yeah, didn't it, like, draw more attention to, what's her name?
Yeah, Mitsuri's.
Mitsuri's mark? Yeah. Like, she's fighting the one demon, and he's like, oh my god, is that a sun breather mark?
Yeah. Like, when Muichiro had the mark, the one demon just kind of like, what's that mark on his face? Oh well. It's so bad. And that brings me to the other part of his particular part in this series that was kind of bad, and that's the demon, Upper Moon 5. God, he was just boring. Like,
he really was. You had to, like, through that whole thing, you're sitting there like, why is this guy in Upper Moon?
Yeah. I remember... I remember when they announced season 3 was in the works and everybody was like, oh, you've read the manga. Is this a good arc? Is this a good arc? And I'm like, yeah, I love this arc. And they're like, oh, what are the Upper Moons like? And I'm like, oh my god, what are the I know there's two of them.
You're just like,
I genuinely couldn't remember them.
So forgettable.
They were both forgettable. I literally couldn't remember either of their abilities. Like, I was sitting there completely drawing a blank. I'm like, I know there's two fights. And I remember one of them feeling like a lot of pressure, like, oh my god, are they gonna survive? But I couldn't remember anything about the fights. I was just like, I know Mushiro's fighting one and Mitsuru's fighting the other, and they kind of go back and forth a little bit, but I couldn't remember shit.
I watched it, you know, not even that long ago, like 3-4 days ago. Mm-hmm. And I'm sitting here like, I don't know, one of them had jar power?
Yeah.
I guess?
Yeah. So, going kind of on a note of why the Upper Moons were the way they were, it kind of feels like a theme. All of the Lower Moons were all kind of like these youngsters that have these really cool abilities and are just like, we're gonna use these abilities to get as many kills as possible in a short amount of time. And their mistakes were all that they drew too much attention to themselves. Like, Rui built this whole, like, family nest thing, like, spiderweb thing up in the mountains and used it to lure in demon slayers and then killed them. And so he got, like, a lot of kills in a short amount of time. But it only took, like, a couple of weeks before they were like, all right, we're sending in the Hashira. Like, obviously something really bad's going on. We're gonna go send in, like, our best of the best to go deal with it. And it took them, like, a couple of hours just to extinguish the entire fucking mountain, so...
Yeah.
And then had the Mugen train, which he'd only been doing the whole train thing for like 2 days before they sent Rengoku. Like, the Lower Moons all just kind of made the same mistake, where they were just like, we have this really cool badass idea, but we don't know how to get out of this if Hashira comes after us.
like this guy on the train could have been successful if he, instead of just wiping out entire trains at a time, just picked out off like 2 or 3 people at a time.
Yeah, and that's where we get to the Upper Moons, where the thing that makes the Upper Moons different from the Lower Moons isn't the fact that they're cooler or more badass or stronger, it's the fact that they are harder to kill. I mean, think about, you know, Upper Moon 6, which consisted of the siblings that share the same Upper Moon, meaning they both have to be beheaded at the exact same time in order to kill them. And the brother was kept a complete secret until the sister was in danger. So most demon slayers are going to cut her head off, feel like they succeeded, and then let their guard down and then get killed by the brother.
Yeah.
And that's just the really, really, really strong demon slayers. It's actually been proven that she'd killed several Hashira just by herself as well. Like, the two of them had a really good thing going where they just never got caught until they just got overwhelmed by Tanjiro and Tenken. Then you have Upper Moon 5, who just moves so quickly that it's just hard to detect that he's even there. He sends all these minions and stuff out to do all of his dirty work, and he just hides in the pot. His introduction, I think, was genuinely one of the better things, where you just see the pot sitting there on the staircase, and then it just grabs the guy and breaks him and crumples him into the pot. That's the horror element that I really liked this season. And it was a really cool introduction, only for him to not do anything interesting again for the rest of the season. And then you have Upper Moon 4, who literally hides himself among his own body. So yeah. He's almost impossible to detect unless you have a really good sense of smell like Tanjiro. So that's really the Upper Moon's whole thing, is that they might not be the coolest or the strongest, but they just don't die. Ever. Like, they're a lot harder to catch, so they're a lot harder to kill.
Yeah.
So I appreciate the fact that these demons aren't exactly the most impressive, but you can definitely understand that they have those survival instincts. Unfortunately, they're just fucking boring.
Oh boy, yeah.
Like, we had way more interesting demons in, like, season 1. Like, the hands demon from the freaking trial on the mountains was more interesting than either of these two.
Yeah.
And I just like, it kind of sucked because we want to
also
see cool
like
demon fights.
What is up with that? Like basically right up until this arc, well, Mugen Train really, like all of the other demons that like Tanjiro killed, you know, you get their backstory and you're like, oh shit, and you almost feel bad for them, you know, like, oh, that's a terrible series of events that led you to become a demon. And then like these two upper moons that, you know, in this new season, you kind of get their backstory and you're like, fuck that guy.
I actually kind of liked that too, because it also introduced the idea that not all demons were like these kind-hearted people that are worth redeeming. We did get that with Upper Moon 6. Like, the siblings genuinely were a parallel version of Tanjiro and Nezuko.
Yeah, absolutely. They were good characters, but like the two Upper Moons here on this one, you just kind of like you get their backstory. Why? I hate these guys. I'm glad they're dead.
I think that's a good thing, though. I kind of like the fact that some villains really are just villains. And I will say that's actually one of the better things about Upper Moon 4 in particular, and I will get more into that. But keeping with the whole bad elements, I really, really was kind of disappointed in the fact that Mitsuri, like, comes in with, like, this really, really cool introduction. And then for, like, two episodes straight, we don't really get to see how she's fighting. It's just she's out there swinging her sword, and we just gotta trust that she's not getting killed.
Yeah.
Like, I think one of the best things about this season was Mitsuri's fighting style introduction when she goes and saves Tanjiro and Genya and Nezuko. When I read the manga, I wasn't really sure how they were going to animate Mitsuri, because I knew it was going to be very, like, gymnastics with, like, a ribbon kind of thing, but it's kind of hard to imagine it when you're just reading a still image manga. Seeing it animated and hearing her battle music and everything that went along with it, I was just like, oh my god, they animated her like a magical girl.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah,
straight up. Her music sounds like it could come straight out of Madoka Magica.
Yeah.
It was so good. And I'm like, this is amazing. She was the best. Like, she's the budget character this season. And then we stopped seeing her fight. Yeah. And then we only see her fight for, like, 5 minutes before they're just like, all right, now she's just gonna keep doing that for the next, like, 4 hours. While the boys go and handle this. Like,
yeah, I did like, at the end of the episode, you know, one of them, they have the Taisho era secret or whatever. Mm-hmm. They're like, oh, Mitsuri, how do you draw your sword and put it back in its sheath? And she's like, like this! And she, like, does the whole whipping it around and, like, slides it into the sheath, and they're like, wow! Like, that was great. I loved that.
The best part is that's straight out of the manga, too. There's, like,
that's
an entire...
So great.
There's, like, an entire, like, side comic that's just them doing that. And it's funnier in the manga, because you literally can't see how she did it. They're just like, wow! Too bad people can't see what you just did.
I mean, to be fair, honestly, like, if I were to see her do that, I'd be like, do it again. I gotta see this, like, 5 times in a row before,
they did.
Like...
It was so good. But yeah, I agree with you that the demon's backstory was kind of garbage, but I will say it works very well for 4, and that's where I kind of want to start getting into the good, because Mitsuri's entire, like, arc in this was so damn good, and I just want to talk about how much I love her. So, beginning with what 4's backstory is that basically he was a thief and just all-around criminal and shitty person, and everybody would call him out on his bullshit, and he'd be like, no, 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 that's not true, I didn't do that, that's a lie, that's... I'm the victim, you're blaming me, I'm telling the truth, I never lied once in my entire life, you know, and he was just a pathological liar, and just... constantly being blamed for things that he actually did and refusing to take responsibility. And
see, and I think that's what got me though with him is, you know, his comment of like, oh, I've never lied before. And like, if his backstory had showed that he wasn't a liar,
mm-hmm.
I'd have been like, that's great, you know, but like the backstory goes and like he's just, it's like nothing but lies. And I'm like, okay, yeah, no.
See, and this is actually where I disagree, because I feel like you're supposed to hate him. Like, he's not supposed to be a redeemable person. The reason I feel like his pathological lying works so well is because it mixes in with his blood art abilities, like, perfectly. Instead of him, like, confronting his problems or facing things head on, he literally just splits apart his emotions to do the fighting for him. And all of his creations, all of the demons that we saw actually doing things this season, were literally creations made by his lies. They were how he saw himself. He saw himself as this ideal, amazing, incredible person. And when Tanjiro actually tried to go after the main body, his own creation stood up for him like, you dare attack somebody that's so weak and helpless and did nothing wrong and is just innocent. You're a monster. And that's because he's convinced himself so much that that's who he is deep down. And Tanjiro's like, you're full of shit. Like, none of you are good.
I did like that Tanjiro called him out on that. He was like, yeah, no, you're attacking innocence yourself. How can you blame me for attacking you?
Yeah, and so I loved that entire concept of his backstory, is just that he's lied so often that he is incapable of understanding reality, and he needs to keep lying not just to other people, but to himself in order to protect himself. And it's literally manifested in his creations. And the reason this works so well with Mitsuri being the one who was leading this fight is that Mitsuri's story is the polar opposite. She had a story where she was born kind of strange and she stood out, and a lot of people were kind of like, wow, like, you're kind of a weirdo and I don't know how to feel about weirdos. So she hid who she really was. She tried lying, she tried starving herself, she dyed her hair black because she thought, well, I should become a wife, I should find somebody that just wants to be with me even if it hurts me. And at the end of the day, she learned that being honest was genuinely the thing that was going to get her to be loved, because when she joined the Demon Slayer Corps and she let her hair be pink and green and she started eating in front of people that actually liked being around her, she found somebody that does genuinely love her. And the master of Demon Slayer is just like, or the Demon Slayer Corps is like, God loves you. You are the most cherished person ever. And anybody that tells you otherwise is just jealous.
Okay, but I gotta know that whole story about how her hair changed color to pink and green after she ate was like 173 strawberry mochi something or another.
Sakura mochi, yeah.
Yeah, like, is that real or is that just a story?
I think the mangaka did confirm that that actually is what caused her hair color to change.
Okay.
But it's hard to say. It's hard to say if that's literally her lore or if it's just like something, you know, her parents tell her. You know how, like, people, like, when you get freckles and your parents, like, oh, those are kisses from the sun, you know? It could have been her parents are just like, oh, you have green and pink hair because you love strawberry mochi, you know?
Yeah.
So it's hard to say if it's actually the cause or if it's just something she's just convinced is true, you know?
All right.
But, yeah, like, one of my absolute favorite scenes, though, is when Igoro gives her the socks, and I will say Ufotable knew their audience here, because in the manga, it's literally just like a single panel. Like, it's literally just the image of him handing her the socks. And then there's like an author's note in one of the books that's just like, oh, Igoro was the one who gave Mitsuri her iconic green socks and told her that she can have them whenever she wants. But the anime went out of their way to animate this entire scene that shows that he's just a cute little wholesome introvert that fell for his designated extrovert.
Yeah.
And that he loves watching her eat because he doesn't eat a whole lot and she eats a ton and they balance each other out. And he doesn't really like flashy stuff, but she loves flashy stuff. And so he wants her to enjoy those things. And he doesn't want her to feel like she should be ashamed of who she is. He wants her to embrace that. And when she says, I'll cherish the socks and make sure they don't get damaged, she's like, No, because that's
he's
not
just
really
like, yo, shut the fuck up. I got them for you to use. Like, if they get damaged, just let me know. I'll get you a new pair. Fuck.
Yeah, because the whole idea is that if she doesn't wear them, then what's the point in giving them to her? He wants her to be herself, because that's what he loves about her.
Yeah.
And it's so wholesome and cute, and it's literally the polar opposite of Upper Moon 4's story, where he's hated by everyone because he never tells the truth, and he's lied so much that he literally has to protect himself by lying more. He's dug his own grave here. Where Mitsuri is finally living and getting closer to the sun and finding people that want her to be truthful and honest. So the fact that they pitted the two of them against each other was really well handled and probably the best part of the entire season, in my opinion. And sometimes I also just like when villains are just pieces of shit, and we're going to get that again here pretty soon, so brace yourself.
Oh yeah, like, I don't mind a villain being just an absolute piece of shit. But, like, I guess my biggest thing is just when a villain is just a villain for the sake of villainy.
Yeah.
You know, like, I hate that. I understand if you're an absolute piece of shit because of reasons.
Mm-hmm.
But if you're just an absolute monster just because, that's not a good character in my mind.
I think the problem is that, again, he's just kind of boring. Like, I think the concept is interesting, but we really didn't get a fleshed out story. Where it's like, I can sit there and dig and nitpick at it and be like, oh, I see what the author was going for, but it's not going to present itself in a format that a lot of people are going to see. Most people are going to watch and they're just be like, well, that was just kind of underwhelming. And that's really how it was supposed to be with Upper Moon 5 as well. Upper Moon 5 is even less fleshed out in this case, because one, putting him up against Muichiro really wasn't a good call, in my opinion, because their stories really have no threads of connection at all. I feel like the author just kind of threw Muichiro in this because they needed an excuse to introduce his backstory, and they're just like, well, we're just going to throw him in with the one demon I don't really have any connection to. That was kind of it. Like, in the same way that, like, Upper Moon 6 was a parallel to Tanjiro and Upper Moon 4 was a parallel to Mitsuri, Upper Moon 5 just really didn't have anything except for the swordsmiths themselves. I genuinely believe that they wrote this character just to be part of this arc. Because the whole story with 5 is that he just was basically a failed artist that was ridiculed by, like, other successful artists, and he's just like, oh, I'm just too good. They just don't understand my work. They don't see my vision. They don't get it. And he was just kind of a piece of shit.
Well, that's, like, kind of the what we got. I feel like that's just, maybe it's because that's just rehashed idea in the same series.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, earlier we had the demon in the house that had the drums, and it was like he was a writer, you know, failed artist, you know, basically the same thing.
Yeah, I think the difference is that that demon actually did have talent, but he was constantly shunned just because all of his superiors were assholes that just wanted to bring him down. Where this demon was the kind of opposite, where his work really was shit. And it really was terrible, and when people try to critique him and be like, listen, your art kind of sucks, he would be like, no, you suck! And then he would just attack people, and really was just kind of a garbage person altogether.
Okay.
So the whole connection with him and the swordsmiths is that all of the swordsmiths, particularly, I'm gonna say his name right, wrong, Hanazezuka-san, the one who makes Tanjiro's sword,
Yeah,
who's so dedicated to his craft that he's just completely incapable of being distracted by anything. Like, a true artisan, in spite of the fact that he's a little bit crazy.
Okay, though. Like, with that, how the fuck did Muichiro get that sword away from him to give it to Tanjiro at the end? I have to know.
He's a Hashira.
Like this... Okay.
You don't fuck with Hashira, man. That's my only explanation, but...
I mean, what's his name? Hanegazuka? whatever.
Hanagazuka?
No, there's a G in there.
Yeah.
Yeah. He seems to have no problem dealing with anyone. He just gets pissed at everyone. Like, you ruined my sword!
Yeah, maybe Muichiro learned his weakness, which is if you poke him in the sides, he gets really ticklish.
Just give him a little tickle.
Yeah. Because they did point that out earlier in the series, that he has very sensitive sides. And he was shirtless for most of the season, so... I think... Okay, you said the worst part was that we didn't get a good boob shot. I think we made up for it with Hanagasuka's face reveal.
All right.
Yeah.
That was a pretty good face reveal.
Because damn, is he pretty. I have a theory about Demon Slayer, and that's all the characters that wear masks. The longer you go without seeing what their face looks like, the prettier they are.
Imagine what the chief looks like.
Because the first character we had with like a mask was Sabito. And we went like a full episode without seeing his face, and then they finally like cut the mask off and I'm like, oh, he's so cute. Look at him. He's got a little pretty boy face. Then we had Inosuke. We went like three episodes.
His face reveal, and you're like, boy, that face does not match that personality.
Yeah. And then you had Hanagazuka, who's just like, oh my god, this man could do anything he wants with that face, and he chooses to be a swordsmith. Alright, respect. So, I'm just curious about Tanjiro's teacher, who wears the Tengu mask.
Yeah.
We literally never see his face in the series. I bet he's gorgeous. He's probably a gilf, alright?
Oh god. I mean, you're not wrong, but oh god.
So yeah, that's my theory about Demon Slayers. The longer you go without seeing their face, the prettier they are. So there's two big elephants in the room about this season though, and both I do want to address now that we kind of went over like, oh, these things were kind of bad, these things were pretty good. The first is how many damn characters we met this season that have the same face as Tanjiro.
Yeah.
Yeah, there was at least three.
You mention it.
Yeah. So one was the Upper Moon One, who we saw him in the very first episode. And everybody's like, oh my god, he has a scar just like Tanjiro. Oh my god, his eyes kind of look like Tanjiro's. Oh my god, I bet that's Tanjiro's dad. It's not. And then we met Yorichi, who we saw in, like, Tanjiro's dream, where Tanjiro was currently inhabiting the body of his ancestor who was talking to Yorichi, and everybody's like, oh my god, that's Tanjiro's dad. He's not. Like, every time you say, that's Tanjiro's dad, he's not. I promise you, none of them are his dad. We met his dad. His dad was a sickly man that would get up once a year and dance, all right? That's all you need to know about Tanjiro's dad.
Look, Candace. Dude had like 7 children. I think he got up more than once a year. If you know what I mean.
He did that the same night that he danced. They all have the same birthday and they can't figure out why.
Oh god. It's all coming together.
Why are all of our birthdays exactly 9 months after Dad dances? But yeah, so none of the characters are Tanjiro's dad, I promise you. But the guy that Tanjiro was kind of like inhabiting, his body that he was inhabiting, that is his ancestor. That's why Tanjiro is able to like inhabit his body during his dreams, because that is his ancestor. None of the other characters that look like Tanjiro are related to him at all. And I promise you this, I won't spoil for you what's their role is, but none of them have any kind of blood connection to Tanjiro.
So where did Tanjiro get his genetic appearance from?
His ancestor, who did look exactly like him. He's the one whose body he inhabited in his dream.
Okay.
Yeah, the only difference is that he doesn't have a scar. Which Tanjiro did point out, the scar is not genetic. He got that scar in a head injury. Like, it's not something he was born with. where the other characters that look a lot like him were born with their scars. So,
okay.
Yeah. So that is the key difference there. They do all look alike, though. Like, this artist has same face syndrome. But, yeah. So the Hanafuda earrings that Yoshiro wears, he did give those to Tanjiro's ancestor, and he did teach Tanjiro's ancestor about the Hinokami Kagura dance. Okay. And that's why Tanjiro's family knew about it, and that's why his family is sun-breathing people. But yeah, he's not blood-related to him at all.
All right.
And then you had Muichiro's dad, who also looks like Tanjiro. And everybody's like, oh my god, it's Tanjiro's dad. No, they're not his dad. I promise you, they're not his dad. He just looks a
little
lot
infidelity
like...
never hurt anyone, okay? just let the fans have this.
So yeah, but there is a reason why a lot of these characters do look alike, but we're not going to get into that until like the final season. But I just, please stop going online and saying, oh my god, it's Tanjiro's dad! I can't believe this is dad! That's like the sixth dad he's had this show! Like, he had one dad, you guys.
A family can just be six dads.
No kids, just six dads.
Just six dads.
Every D&D party ever.
Don't lie. There's five dads in the horny bar. That's the D&D party.
You're joking if you think the bard isn't a dad, okay?
Fair.
He might not know he's a dad, but he's a dad.
No, it's called magical conception, okay? When you're a bard, you just sing a little tune to your dick and be like, no babies, no babies, no babies! And like you're just, well, you won't have kids. That's how it goes.
The most reliable birth control. But yeah, I now need a meme of like the Maori show of just all of the characters that look like Tanjiro, and just be like, the results are in, and the mangaka says, you are not the father.
Maori.
Yeah, Maori, that's it.
oh god. I need to find or make this.
So yeah, like, I just want to put an end to the speculation now. Tanjiro does not have, like, six fathers. He had one father, one ancestor that we've seen. Everybody else just looks like him, okay? Like, I don't know why. There is a reason why they all look like each other. I don't know why Tanjiro looks like them. It's never really fully explained. But that gets us into the other big elephant in the room. The one that everybody is deeming the biggest plot armor of the entire season. But it was a heartbreaking and beautiful and touching plot armor moment. And that is Nezuko.
Yeah. Yeah, this is on level of fucking Kirito from Sword Art Online.
Yeah, at least it was beautiful and heartwarming and touching, and it makes me happy. Okay, let us have this.
Yeah.
So the end of the season ends with Tanjiro having to choose to shield Nezuko from sunlight or protect civilians from Upper Mood 4, and also potentially letting Upper Mood 4 get away. Nezuko makes the choice for him by kicking him into the like group of civilians and roasting up in the sun. Ufotable handled this scene so well, because in the manga, this is literally three panels. Where the anime took the time to pace it, we see Tanjiro basically having a panic attack over this moment. Like, it has a lot of weight to it. So, yeah, Ufotable absolutely nailed this entire scene. It's so...
Oh yeah, yeah, this was such a good scene.
Yeah. And then we see Tanjiro's final attack, which feels like it has so much weight to it, because it feels like he sacrificed his entire purpose of this show just to kill number four. Like, not even, like, number one or Muzan directly. It was just literally this nobody who has a piece of shit backstory. So we can feel Tanjiro's frustration in this moment, and we just kind of feel really, really bad for him, because it feels like he failed over somebody that we just... genuinely didn't care about. And I think that does give more weight to the fact that these characters are boring, because if they had been really interesting villains, we probably would have been like, come on, Tanjiro, you gotta fight him. Like, this is too interesting of a story. But the fact that he's just some fucking nobody makes it feel so much worse that he sacrificed his little sister for it.
Yeah.
And maybe that's just me coping with the fact that these villains were boring, but if that's what it takes to cope, that's what how I'm gonna cope. And then the big reveal is that Nezuko has conquered the sun and no longer needs to only come out at night, which is the very thing that Muzan was looking for the entire time. And we get into Muzan's whole backstory about the blue spider lilies and all that shit.
How he became a demon and all of this shit, yeah.
Yeah, which is kind of implied that he was born a demon, he just, his doctor was suppressing it. But, yeah. So, obviously this is a plot armor element. Like, I'm not gonna sit there and deny and be like, no, it's actually a really deep thing that really makes a lot of sense. It's plot armor. But yeah. I will kind of address the fact that the internet, as soon as this episode came out, was just kind of like, but how? Does it ever explain how? But how? How is it explained? Did anybody explain it?
No, it doesn't. Just shut up. It happened, okay?
Well, the funny thing is, it explained it in the same episode. I just feel like everybody was just ugly crying so much they missed the entire fucking explanation. Because we go back to Tamayo, the doctor, and she's writing a letter to Tanjiro being like, hey, so Nezuko's kind of interesting, because normally when people turn into demons, they're kind of rabid and crazy for like a few days, but after a while they start to become normal again and can blend into human society and are super intelligent and can talk and can do all of the things a normal person can do except going out in sunlight. And Nezuko is still kind of acting like a toddler, so that's a little bit weird. And then she goes on to say, like, I have this sneaking suspicion that Nezuko, instead of developing her mind to make her mind more human-like, instead all of her regeneration abilities are focusing on her body, so her body could become more human-like. So this is why she's able to go out in sunlight. Because instead of becoming smart, she decided to be cute, adorable, widow sister material, but be able to stand out in the sun. Ooh, woo. So the question does remain, why is Nezuko special enough to be able to do this? And that really is where it gets into plot armor. I will kind of spoil it a little bit. There's two explanations in the manga. Neither of them are really confirmed to be the truth. But this is kind of bonus content than actual, like, manga spoilers. But the first is that apparently Nezuko's mom drank tea that was made from the blue spider lily when she was pregnant with Nezuko.
Okay.
And so that's supposed to explain why she has the blue spider lily abilities. The other explanation is that since her family had mastered sun breathing, she inherited that just naturally. And since she's a demon that can use sun breathing, that means that she's conquered the sun. So those are the two explanations. Neither of them are concrete confirmed that that's exactly what happened. But that's what basically in the manga is like, it's one of the two. We're pretty sure. Like, 90% sure it's one of the two. But for the most part, the answer is just, well, we can't kill Nezuko halfway through the series, then Tanjiro's not gonna keep being a demon slayer.
Yeah.
Like, that's really the answer here. But I thought it was a really good ending. I thought it was a really heartwarming scene, and Nezuko just struggling to say basic phrases was absolutely fantastic. And it also confirmed that scene at the end of the first season where Tanjiro is getting ready to go to sleep and he hears Nezuko be like, thank you so much, I love you, brother. That was definitely in his head. Because she didn't have the speech comprehension to say that. So
yeah.
It did confirm, because that wasn't in the manga. That was an anime-exclusive moment, and I thought it was stupid and cheesy and awful. So I'm so glad they kind of retconned it. So I'm like, wow, they really denied us the really cute scenes between Nezuko and Zenitsu just to give us a cheesy one-liner where she's like, I love you, Nisan.
I mean, isn't that every weeb's dream to hear a girl say, I love you, Nisan?
You almost couldn't say that.
I almost couldn't.
It didn't want to come out.
It really didn't.
But that brings me to literally my favorite thing about this season. And I'm going to be straight with you guys here. my favorite thing about this entire arc, and I felt like they perfected it, and it was so good, and I don't care about any of the flaws of this season, because this is my favorite character of the year. I hope he gets nominated for Best Boy of the Year, because he fucking deserves it, and that's Genya. Genya is the best part of this entire season. I have one beef with Genya. I don't like that he has the same voice actor as Bakugo, because every time he talks, all I can hear is Bakugo. And I don't like Bakugo.
That's fair.
I tried to like Bakugo. I do not like Bakugo. I love Genya. Genya's my son. I have adopted him. He is so good, and I love him so much, and he's amazing, and I can't wait for you guys to see him in future seasons, because he only gets better. But my favorite thing about him, ultimately, is that he is a parallel to Nezuko. A lot of people were saying, like, they saw Genya's backstory, and they're like, oh my god, him and Tanjiro are basically the same person. No! He's Nezuko. They are both the second oldest siblings. They were both left behind at the house while their older brother was gone to protect the younger siblings. Both of them carried the youngest in their arms everywhere they went. And they were the ones that tried to fight in the end. And they both have cool demon powers. And both of them are incapable of using breathing style techniques. They can only use pure brute strength. Genya and Nezuko are parallels to each other.
Yeah.
The only key difference between the two of... Oh, and they both also looked up to their mother as, like, their hero and their idol. The only key difference between the two of them is that Nezuko has a really loving cinnamon roll of a brother, and Genya's brother's kind of a piece of shit asshole. Like, Genya's my favorite of, like, the five main characters that, like, graduated in Tanjiro's, like, trial class or whatever. And then Sanemi is, like, the worst Hashira, so...
Okay, like, just speaking of Hashira, though. So basically, with every new Hashira that gets introduced, it just has a way of making me fall in love with them.
Right?
Like fucking Rengoku. God, love Rengoku. And then with this, it's like, oh, I love the Mist Boy. Oh, I love Mitsuri. Oh, is it gonna do this to, like, every single Hashira? Am I gonna fall in love with all of them?
All of them except for Sanemi.
Okay, just as long as I know what I'm getting into here.
There is absolutely a Sanemi fan out there who is, like, out for my throat right now. Like,
probably.
Sanemi is so good. Sanemi was so... He just got a tragic backstory where he had to kill his own mother and his brother accused him of being a murderer. I don't give a shit, alright? Sanemi is a piece of shit. Like, I don't like him. It's the worst character. I do like his final battle in the series, like when we do get to see him fighting an Upper Moon. It's a really good chapter, and I've, like, honestly, it was his best moment, but I still don't like him. I feel the same way about him as I do Bakugo. Like, I tried, and I don't like them. I do love Obanai Igoro, though. He's the one that gave Mitsuri the socks.
Yeah.
He is my favorite Hashira.
Okay.
And I didn't think he was gonna be my favorite Hashira. And then I read the final arc, and I'm like, Obanai is the best Hashira. For the longest time, I was in the same boat where I'm just like, every new Hashira becomes my new favorite Hashira. Then we got to the end of the series, I'm like, it's Obanai. Obanai is the best Hashira. And I just love him so much. I love the fact that he has these, like, strong romantic feelings for Mitsuri. I love that Rengoku is basically his brother. Like, the two of them were basically brothers. They were both raised by Rengoku's dad. I love that he gives Tengen shit because he knows Tengen can fucking handle it. I love that he just is fucking honest with everybody, even if he acts like an asshole about it. He has no real ties to anybody but Mitsuri and Rengoku, and he's just like, anybody else could go fuck themselves. I love Obanai. Like, he's so good. And he's got his little snake. I'm terrified of snakes. Everybody who knows me knows that I have a really irrational fear of snakes. I love his snake. She's so cute. Like, I can appreciate snakes. I just am terrified of them. But Obanai is good. I kind of want to cosplay as either Obanai or Genya, honestly.
All right.
They're my favorites. But next season, we get Giyu's backstory. I'm so excited because Giyu's my second favorite Hashira.
Giyu is pretty great. I do love Giyu as well.
Giyu's so good. And his backstory is awesome because it has Sabito in it. And Sabito is my favorite character for like 4 seasons. So... I cosplay Sabito. I love Sabito. And Giyu gets a whole Sabito arc. And if I have anything to say to Ufotable while they're working on this next season, is do with Sabito what you guys did with Nezuko in this last episode. Like, give his arc a little bit more padding. Because in the manga, it's literally like a page. And I'm like, he deserves better. Come on.
Yeah.
He's such a good character. He's so awesome. And you guys will finally understand why I love him and Giyu so much. And I hope you guys understand why I love Genya so much, because Genya is best boy. And if you guys ever meet me in person and you tell me Genya is best boy, you are going to get a high five or a hug, whichever you prefer, or just like a hand hug, if you guys know what a hand hug is. Whatever you guys are socially comfortable with getting. So.
Yeah.
But yeah, hopefully you guys will see me in the future at some point cosplaying Genya and representing, because... best, but also a message to the internet. The Second Amendment breathing joke was funny like twice, or the American breathing Second Amendment form, whatever joke. It was funny like the first 2 times I saw it. You guys could stop making that joke.
Yeah.
Genya doesn't know how to breathe, okay, so he can't use a sword. He's voiced by Bakugo's voice actor. Okay, you can't blame him for not knowing how to breathe. So, maybe that was perfect casting.
No, no breathe. The only X, only scream.
Yeah, no breathe, only scream. I also love that at the end, when he saw Nezuko in the sunlight, he's like, oh, thank goodness. Because deep down, like, okay, so everybody talked about, like, he was blushing with Mitsuri. Everybody's like, oh, I think Genny has a crush on Mitsuri. No, he's terrified of women. Like, straight up, he's scared of women. He's like, women scare him more than demons do. So when Mitsuri was just giving him a hug, he was panicking. But then there's...
What would happen if he came up against a woman demon?
Yeah, right? It's a good thing he didn't have to face Daki, but... yeah, so then when he's around Nezuko, though, he's kind of comfortable around her, because she's like... she now thinks of him as a second older brother. Like, it's kind of wholesome and cute. So now he's just kind of like, oh, I guess I'm Nezuko's older brother now. Suck it, Tanjiro. But no, he actually loves Tanjiro too. Like, Tanjiro won him over in the end. And now he's kind of like their adopted sibling. They're like, you don't need your real older brother. You're our brother now. Like, which is how it should be. Genya deserves a good family. I love him. So, with that, I have said everything I wanted to say about the season. It was amazing. It has its flaws, and I will give you guys credit. Critiquing something you love is genuinely a positive thing, because it does show that you are invested enough in it to critique it. And you're not just riding the coattails of the hype train, you know? You actually do care about something.
Yeah.
So, I think you could have bad moments and still have it be a really good season. With that said, I really do think the entertainment arc was the peak of Demon Slayer. So if you guys are hoping we'll get another season that good, the final season kind of has those moments, but it was a bit rushed, so that really is ultimately up to Ufotable if they want to pad it out. But for the most part, Entertainment District at least was peak for me. The rest of this is like, it's good, but... don't set your expectations to anime of the year standards, you know?
All right. Yeah.
Yeah. So with that, thanks for listening, you guys.
Absolutely. Thank you.
It's good to be back.
Good to be back. Hopefully it won't take us another 2 months to do another episode.
2 months later. Hey, guys.
Bye, guys.
Bye.